This is the No Dhamma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by Michael Dowden, the founder of Andromeda Galactica Solutions. Thank you very much for joining me once again on the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much, Brian. Happy to be here.
For people who haven't heard our previous podcast, and I think this is either your third or fourth time being on, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a software architect and entrepreneur. Right now I'm working with Andromeda to build software applications for customers, for ourselves. We specialize in building software products. So that's kind of what I spend most of my time doing, is helping develop software applications for various people.
But tonight, though, we're going to talk about a different topic that you have a lot of interest in, and it is managing remote teams.
Absolutely.
So could you kind of introduce that topic first?
Sure. So this is something that I've been doing off and on for a long time, and that is working remotely or managing people or projects that are remote or distributed. And since we started Andromeda in 2015, our entire team is distributed. Everybody works out of their home. We don't have an office at all. So this is something that we've been kind of working with for a little bit.
So never an office, no one. And did you choose people that were geographically, let's say time zone wise, they were close, or did you go, nah, it doesn't even matter anymore?
No, not at all. So in fact, this is fun. My first two employees, at the time that I hired them, one of them I hired out of boot camp. One of them I hired over Twitter direct message. And they were in California at the time. And the other was in Indianapolis, which is where I am. And since then, I have hired other people in various places. I've hired at least two other people over social media. Very little interview to do with it. And right now, my team extends, like one of the projects that we're working on, the client's in California, one of the developers is in Georgia. And so we span 12, and I don't mean the state of Georgia. So we spend 12 time zones right now just on that project alone. So
when you say you hire people right out of Twitter or social media, and you reference interviews, did you have a formal interview or what?
No. Two of those people I had no formal interview at all. One of them I did, and it was just to make sure that it was a good mutual like fit between us. But no, two of them there were no formal interview at all. We just did it because here's the deal. One of the first people that I hired, I hired to do QA work, organization, documentation. And I already knew what they were like as a writer, as a communicator and everything from our experience on social media, right? One of the people I hired to work with us was to be a social media manager. So that kind of made sense. One of the other people is an assistant. And like, I got to see evidence of their work already. I didn't need to go through the interview process, if that makes sense.
But if I was on the other side, if I was the candidate, I would still like to see what the people I'm going to work with are like. You know, there have been times I have walked away from companies because, absolutely, you know, there's not just one difficult person, but two or three. And it's kind of, well, if they're the face of the company that's interviewing me, I wouldn't want to see the people that they're hiding.
Sure, of course. And the answer is I always offer that, always.
And did any of these people go for that? Or they're, no, we know you.
Not,
we're happy.
Not always. Okay. No, not always. And the reality is that that's something I'm really conscientious about because it's our team is fairly diverse. And I want to make sure that whoever we hire is going to be really okay with the type of dynamic that we have on the team. But on the same side, some of the folks that I've hired already knew some of the other people in advance, so it wasn't a really big deal, just kind of coincidentally more than anything else, but it can work out. I think that one of the things that we're starting to see happen, and I don't know how much of a factor remote work has played into this, I figure that it's a non-zero influencing factor, is that we are going to see some of the hiring dynamics change a little bit over time, how we go through interviewing and everything, especially when you have a team like mine where we don't ever interact physically, short of maybe doing a team event. it's just not something that we do. So we hire for the actual situation that you're going to be in, which is you're going to be working on your own a lot. You're going to be in meetings with the team a lot. And those are the things that I'm going to put you through before we hire, for example.
So for you, when COVID came along, it was business as usual, I guess. You were, it didn't matter to you. It didn't impact you in any significant way.
Well, it did, but not in the ways that impacted other companies and other people, right? So the overall logistics of how we functioned as a team didn't change. We were able to do our work as usual, to do our meetings as usual. All of our day-to-day stuff was exactly the same. But the pandemic still impacted us in ways that I don't know that I would have expected in advance, because I kind of expected that we were pretty well protected from the change, but I don't think that I was prepared for how sweeping the impact was going to be. So for some examples, our team was accustomed to doing online meetings. This is just the way we interact with each other. No big deal. But all of a sudden, everybody was doing online meetings. I had never heard of Zoom before the pandemic started. And suddenly that's the new buzzword and then the new platform everybody's communicating on. The number of meetings that started getting requested or scheduled with me just exploded. Even in situations where normally there would have been no meeting necessary, maybe it would have been an email. I feel like people felt disconnected because they weren't used to this way of working. And everybody wanted to do a Zoom call as opposed to an email or a phone call, or certainly as opposed to meeting in person. So it really did change the way I interacted with a lot of clients, a lot of business partners, et cetera. So those things changed a lot. The other thing that happened is that there's a lot of uncertainty going on, right? Nobody knows exactly what's going on. And that caused a level of psychological stress on us as a team that I don't think we were prepared on it for, especially some of us had kids in school. You don't know day to day if your kid is going to school or not. That was a really weird thing to go through there for a few months. And that was hard. But then the kids are just home for an extended period of time and you weren't prepared for that. We had one employee that had to essentially quit over that because she's like, I can't do this right now. And I understand, right? That was an unexpected thing that happened to us, even though we were kind of ready for it. I can imagine it was only that much harder if you were accustomed to going to the office, you were accustomed to sending your kids to school, and now you're all home. Everybody's trying to go through this adjustment period. And that's really stressful. There's a lot of things happening in addition to the overall, I don't know how long this is going to last or what to plan and prepare for.
Yeah. And I guess, yeah, you did have that advantage of at least you and your staff were familiar with it. Whereas I was working for a company that wasn't familiar with it, but they did pivot pretty quickly. It was impressive, you know, in the space of a matter of weeks. They had shipped out monitors to everyone, cables, cameras, microphones, headsets, everything. Pretty good. You know, I can't remember precisely what it was, but they sent a photo of a room with 800 monitors ready to go. You know, they really got their stuff together, the logistics of it, and got it all going. But there still was, you know, in the early days, this attitude of work from home, as it was called. But, you know, it wasn't a fair thing to call it. You know, our age group have never gone through a pandemic. The last one I remember reading about was, I think, in the mid-50s. You know, this is not work from home. It is isolation, being careful about whom you meet and get close to. No cure, no vaccine in sight at the time.
Right.
So, you know, calling it from work from home never sat well with me.
No, I totally agree. And like I had been working from home and then the pandemic hit and then I was working under a pandemic. Like the fact that I was doing it from home, like whatever, but it was everything about the way we went about our day-to-day interactions. A lot of things just changed and the amount of stress you're under is different. and the amount of care you had to take with interactions. One example of this is just in timeliness of responses. So one of the things that happened that I observed is the number of meetings that people would no-show, or the average amount of time to get back to an email, to reply to an email, started going up and up and up and up. So where previously somebody would be like a next day type of email reply, it might be next week. And I observed this in almost all of my professional interactions for almost a year. And one of the things that I, once I identified that this was going on, one of the things that I took great care to do is to never apologize for being late to respond to an email. I stopped doing that. I used to habitually do it. There's a lot of reasons not to, but one of them is that if I apologize for being late, then I'm continuing to reinforce that standard that there's a specific expected time by which you need to reply. And I started trying to proactively give people permission to reply when they have time, you know, when they're able to do so, because this is hard. There's so many situations also where, like, you were fortunate. You had a company that was trying to prepare the gear and the equipment and all the different things you need logistically. There were a lot of companies that weren't doing this for a number of reasons. One of them is that everybody thought this was going to be temporary. Like, we're not going to make long-term commitments to making this work because this is just going to be for a few weeks. We'll all be back in the office and everything's going to be great. Well, as we know now, more than 2 years later, the pandemic's still not over. So there's been a lot of adjustments that have had to happen during that time period, but it's not the same as it was before all this started. It's just a completely different dynamic. And if you say, for example, today, remote work didn't work for us. Well, if you started remote work in 2020, then all due respect, you have no freaking idea if remote work works for you or not, because you haven't been doing it. You're still in kind of chaos or crisis mode. You might be slowly coming out of that, but you've never really given it a fair shot, especially if you never committed to long-term changes that are necessary to be really effective as a remote team.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. You touched on it there. There are different kinds of remote work. Could you go through the categories as you see them?
Oh, yeah, sure. So especially pre-pandemic, there were a lot of different ways that this would go around. So one of those is kind of how or where you work from. So one type of remote work that I did for a long time is working from client sites, right? So maybe I was employed by like my current company, or I was employed by a consulting company, but I did some of my work in person at a client site. Well, that's remote work technically, right? Because you're disconnected from your team physically and are put into your own situation. That has its own level of kind of stress and considerations. You're under the microscope at the client. Maybe you have completely different, maybe they give you their own computer. You can't even use the same computer. Maybe you can't access your email or your chat program or whatever to stay connected with your team. Then there's the types of places, call it the coffee shops, but it can be a coffee shop. It can be a hotel room. It can be anywhere where you're traveling around and kind of you're in and out, but you can't set up shop there really, right? You can't really establish a fixed routine in this type of space. And then finally, you have something that's not an office, but it's someplace that's more consistent, whether that's at your home, somebody else's home, at a co-working space, or someplace where you have like reserved space that you go to day in and day out to set up. It's not your office, but it's still kind of a consistent routine. And all of those have very different dynamics to how they work. And there's also a difference in how often you are working remotely and how often your entire team is working remotely. So if you have a 5-person team and you work from home 2 days a week and are in the office the other three, there's only a 50% chance that any given person is going to be in the office the same time as you if you need to have a conversation with them, right? It takes just 2 days a week as a team for that to happen. So if your team is working from home, what I call very infrequently, so one or two times a month, let's call it. So like when you need to take a day to work from home or work somewhere, or you're traveling or whatever, you can do it. But most of the time when you're in the office, there's a specific dynamic around that. And the expectation is still you're in the office. And so let's say that I'm in the office in that scenario and I need to interact with you, but you're out. no big deal. I'm just going to wait a day or two till you are in the office and we're going to have the conversation. You get into the situation of simply pushing off interactions. I'm not going to interact with you because it's difficult. I'm going to just wait because eventually you're going to be back here. As soon as you start talking like 2 or 3 days a week, now you can't really do that anymore. That doesn't work, but it's still, because it's only like 50-50, it's still kind of really hard to build up that routine of how are we going to communicate? How are we going to collaborate? How are we going to make things work? That's what I call like almost the turmoil state, where you really need to set up routines and processes around what this remote work situation looks like, but you have to commit to doing that. And a lot of teams don't, especially initially. And then there's the typical work from home, right? Where you work remotely as the norm, and you're maybe in the office for special events. Now, in this situation, you absolutely have to build all of your communications around this. All of your communications are going to be through some sort of online channel, right? The in-person events are now the exception, not the norm, and you have built your processes around that. So there's all these different scenarios. So how often you're working from home, when you're working remotely, where you're working from, who's around you when you're doing it. Are you in a situation where it's really easy to hop on a video call, or is there going to be background noise and distractions? All these different things factor into what is that experience really going to be like, not only for me, but for my team. Because if I'm traveling from coffee shop to coffee shop, my team never knows when they're going to be able to get a hold of me. And that's problematic, right? So like when I'm traveling, which I do for conferences from time to time, I try to have specific touch points where we'll check in. I try to be really, really good about things like Slack so that my team knows how to get a hold of me, even though I'm not following the same routine I normally would, for example.
On the point about, let's say, your staff and how they've handled remote work, have you found that certain types of personality are better at it? And that, you know, it's fine for them, but others would prefer to see you more often. I know in your particular company right now, they're quite spread out, but I suppose in a more general sense.
So on my team, we're all very much fans of the remote work. Now, I one of the developers that was with us for a while, initially, he wasn't sold on the idea and was kind of like, so where do I go to work? Anywhere you want. You want me to get you a co-working space? Like, you want to come to my house? You want to go to a coffee shop? You want to work out of your basement? I don't care. And he came to my house a couple times. He worked out of a couple places, and then he started working from home. And before you know it, he's like, this is awesome. And he started doing a lot more, spending the morning with his son and then working in the afternoon and evening and kind of rearranging things and really adapted to, hey, this is fantastic. But it can take time to kind of discover what the opportunities are that weren't there before. So that's one of the things, but there are definitely personalities. So I have a really good friend who I've worked with at a number of different companies. We went to college together, all these things. He has worked from home off and on, but would prefer to be in an office with people. That's just what he's comfortable. There's a lot of people that want their home to be like their me time space, and they want to go someplace else for the work time. And it helps really with that separation. Am I working or am I not working? And that is definitely something that can be really hard when you're actually working out of your home for long periods of time, is it can be really hard to separate. I hate to use the work-life balance because it's not really, it's just like, when do I stop being working and start being at home?
Yeah, I've seen that. All right, a couple of points. So I used to prefer going to the city in downtown Boston, but then when this hit, it was kind of, you know, I'm getting used to working from home, or whatever we're going to call it, working at home during a pandemic. I couldn't imagine spending, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours commuting each day. It would feel like such a waste of my time, because my time is better spent getting started, doing my work, finishing, going for a run, doing other things, spending more time with my daughter. The idea of being, you know, being required to be physically present somewhere at the expense of my time now is not something I'd go for anymore.
Oh, I totally agree. And I've worked out of a lot, some very nice offices. I used to work in downtown Indianapolis. I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed being downtown, and there were good things about it, but it's one of those, I would love to do it every once in a while, not day in and day out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same. Not at all. But then to your point, you know, even if you go in occasionally, the people you might want to meet won't be there, or you'll see different people every time. So you don't get to form the relationships you would if you were there all the time. So it is different. I want to go back to one thing you touched on, though, about communication. I find that asynchronous communication is obviously very helpful, but I'd still prefer to have a call with someone. From your perspective, you know, and managing teams, what's your recommendation or what's your process?
So we try to prioritize asynchronous communication as the default and the source of truth. So say, for example, that we're going to be in a live meeting. Somebody has to take notes and it has to get documented, everything we discuss, because the documentation that comes out of that meeting, whether it's the meeting minutes or kind of for doing like technical decisions or architecture or making roadmap, whatever that might be, it is the documentation that is the output of that meeting that is the thing that has long-term value. Anything that didn't get documented essentially didn't occur. And we shouldn't be used as kind of an assumption in any way, shape, or form. But that's exactly the polar opposite of the way a lot of teams worked before. Like I've been on lots of teams. I've worked for 100 companies and some form or another. I've worked out of a lot of different offices, and almost every single one of them, face-to-face in-person interactions are where almost all of the knowledge transfer happened. Teeny tiny percent of it would ever get documented anywhere. And so it was just all this knowledge just living in people's brains. And people remember things differently, even when they go through that same exact event. You can have 10 people sit through a meeting, come up with specific decisions, and if you don't write them that down and ask each one of them 2 days later, you're going to get 10 different answers about exactly what was decided. And that's one of the things that I find is a lot more beneficial about kind of a documentation first approach to communication. And so one of the things when we do asynchronous communication, whether that's through like Slack or email, so long as we're kind of having a one-off conversation that doesn't really apply to anything else, that's fine. But as soon as it's like, okay, we've made a decision or we come to a realization or this is something that needs to persist, that has to get moved over into our documentation platform. And we have shortcuts set up in Slack to be able to move an entire conversation thread into our wiki, our knowledge base, to make that easy. But those types of things are really important to us because the persistent documentation is absolutely the source of truth for everything.
But
there's
got
still value in those personal interactions, right?
But now you've got Slack, email, wiki. Maybe you've got Jira, Asana, or something else. Maybe you've got an alert system from your cloud provider. Maybe you've got a paging system. Maybe you've got tickets from customers. You know, I mean, this is not uncommon, you know, right. Five different ways of communicating.
Right.
And I have found that I struggle with it. And it's kind of, you know, one becomes more important to me than the other, or I'll ignore an email if it isn't directly to me, or I'll ignore a message on a channel on Slack that I'm not as involved in, because I have to tune something out. Otherwise, I'll be chasing messages all day long.
Absolutely. And that's certainly true, just as true for us as it is for anybody else. And the interesting thing is, I don't think that this is unique to remote work. I think it is something that has gotten worse over the last 4 to 5 years, just as a state of technology, as much as anything.
And this is before remote work. Absolutely.
And I think it's gotten worse the last 2 years, like a lot worse, but it's a huge problem. And the way we try to handle that is to A, minimize the number of different tools that we have as much as possible. And even though like we can't, right? So we have Jira and Confluence and Slack and email that we use all the time. And in order to try to mitigate some of this, right, we try to automate some things. So Jira and Confluence are tightly integrated, and there's one single source of truth for everything. So Confluence, our wiki, is our knowledge base, is our source of truth for absolutely everything except for tasks, which are in Jira. And we try to keep those things as tightly tied together as possible. And so even like if you've committed code, all of your code commits, they tie back to something, to a story in Jira. When you were talking in Slack, those conversations are great, but as soon as, whenever it's necessary, we will tag a Jira story, and it'll show up right there so that we can link over to it. Things get documented as necessary on the story. Things get documented in the knowledge base. We set up a lot of automation. I use Zapier a lot. So we automate a lot of back and forth things so that when we get email, for example, most of the email we get, whether it's a support email or questions or stuff from clients, as much as possible, all that stuff goes straight into the appropriate Slack channel. So now there is a Slack channel that has all of the conversations around a thing. And we've tried really hard, even though we use email with our clients, that's not where we go to look stuff up anymore. And so you've got the interactive conversations and then the documentation happening. And there's so much, it's been so streamlined. And part of it is that we have each person on our team is kind of responsible for documenting their own stuff. And we have a couple team members who are literally just responsible for helping manage communication. Because it is otherwise it's just impossible to manage. You can't do it all.
That's their role, communication. That's it.
Basically, yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. Yeah, because a lot of big companies don't do that. And again, I'm not assuming you're a small company, but what you're describing, it sounds like you're small. But to dedicate people to that, you know, it's a mark of the level of importance you give to it.
Yep.
Well, and I guess it's the mark of how a lot of companies don't realize how important it is.
Right. Here's the deal. Because we're a small company, I can't afford not to do it. Because I can't, especially if I look at my developers' time, my designers' time, the people that are really billing as a consulting company, I can't waste their time. We're a small business. So I don't, if I can help it. If you're a larger company, you can absorb some of the inefficiencies that I absolutely cannot absorb.
That makes perfect sense. You've given us a list of the tools you use. Is there anything else you'd recommend in regard to tools?
Right. So I've recently gone through and written an entire blog series about some of the tools that I use just to run the business, for example, in addition to kind of managing the technical communication. I like the Atlassian tools. Other people don't. I know a lot of teams that work on .NET and they use the entire suite of Microsoft tools from Teams, and I'm completely blanking, Azure DevOps and all these things. And that works too. Anytime you've chosen a tool suite that integrates well between the different kind of modes of communication, it's going to be beneficial, in my opinion.
How do, from a manager perspective, how do you handle, let's say, difficult conversations with employees about performance or whatever it happens to be when it's remote?
Yep. So there's a few things. First of all, don't let anything linger at all. So if somebody does something awesome, it's going to be brought up publicly in the next stand-up. I'll usually reach out to them right away. Hey, thanks. You did an awesome job on this. That was fantastic. The next all-team stand-up, that's going to get brought up as, hey, this person did this thing. Congratulations. Fantastic. We try very hard as part of our team stand-ups. One of the things that we do, and we have a one team stand-up every week, every Monday. And one of the things we do is what's a win that you have from the last week? It can be a personal win, professional win, whatever that is. And we also try to share things that we've learned that might help other people, right? So that we're not fighting on those types of things. We do those things out in the open. If there's ever an issue with performance or something didn't work out the way we expected, if it's a lot of times it'd be like, you know what, I miscommunicated to you. I'm sorry. Here's what we need to do instead. Let's go do it. That happens more than I'd care to admit, but that's something I'll generally do publicly in the appropriate channel. But if somebody screwed up, I'm going to ping them. We're going to have a one-on-one like video call as soon as possible. So we can just have a conversation about what happened, what we're going to do. And it's never antagonistic. Part of it is that I don't let things linger. Like, we're going to have that conversation right away and we're going to come up with a solution at that point in time. The focus is on how we're going to solve the immediate problem. And then what are we going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again? It's never, you're a bad person or I'm mad at you or those, right? Like, I suppose if somebody was being abusive to another person, we'd have an I'm mad at you conversation, but I haven't ever had to have those on my current team, which is fantastic. But just getting those conversations out of the way as quickly as possible and doing it in real time as much as humanly possible is very, very helpful. We don't do traditional like review cycle. What we do is every single quarter, we have quarterly one-on-one meetings where the whole purpose is I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions about how things are going, and you're going to answer because I'm trying to get information from you on what's good, what's bad, what you'd like to see different. Is there a book you want me to read? Is there something you'd like me to do differently? It's not me critiquing you. And usually some of those things will come through as well, but it's literally, I want to make your job better. I want to make your life better. What can I do to help with that? And we do that every single quarter. And that tends to go really well.
From the perspective of a relatively small company spread out across the US states and now into Georgia and former Soviet Republic, how do you deal with things like contracts or pay or laws and stuff like that?
Right. So for the international team, we have a business-to-business relationship with a firm out of Lithuania that handles all of that for us. For the in the US team, we work with a PEO, which is a professional employer organization. And they handle all of the HR logistics for us. So, and I couldn't recommend this hire for a small business in particular. So basically, they are legally the employer. They're the ones providing benefits. They're taking care of the salary. They are taking care of the legal compliance and whatever states are required. They're dealing with all the taxes. And I just have to pay them, basically. They help with things like, okay, what should your employee handbook look like? Like, what do you want to do in these different situations? And so I, as the business owner, still have almost total control over what a day-to-day looks like in the life of my employees, what the hiring and onboarding process looks like, all those sorts of things. But I don't have to deal with all of the really nasty legal parts of having employees, which is fantastic.
I'm sorry, we are going on a slight tangent from what I had intended, but this is really interesting. But does that then make the people that are working with you contractors to your company?
Nope.
They are employees of Andromeda Galactica?
Yes, it is co-employment.
Okay, I haven't heard of such a thing.
Yep. So no, they're full employees. They are not contracted to us in any way. And it's a really interesting relationship. It's been around for a while, and I honestly had not heard of it when I first set out to start the business, but it's been really fantastic.
Yeah, I wanted to ask because someone who's listening, this might be of interest to them.
Totally.
But I'm going to bring us back to kind of more what we were talking about. You were talking about tools a few minutes ago, Jira, Confluence, those kind of things. And when we mentioned Jira, Agile pops to mind, whether it should or it shouldn't. There's a debate. It doesn't matter. How do you handle, let's say, Agile development and remote work?
Right. So we're actually in the process of writing some public documentation for what our development methodology looks like, because we've kind of built our own amalgamation around UX principles and lean practices for the most part. But we do a lot of Kanban types of things. We control work in progress. We have the board and the flow. We work to releases, not to sprints. And we don't necessarily schedule those things too much in advance. So we'll pick a unit of work to work on, and we'll do that as long as it takes. And it's very different. So we control how much we're doing, not when it's done by. There's nothing wrong with the other way around, but you've got to kind of pick one of those approaches to some extent. And that's how we've been handling that. But it works really well in a small team, because it's a lot easier to control how much we're working on, make sure that each person has a meaningful amount of work, and still feel like we're making progress towards all of the objectives, even when we happen to have a lot of ongoing projects at any given point in time, which can certainly happen. It's not unusual for us to have between 5 and 10 projects at a time happening as a small team. And it's really, really, really hard to do something like, you have to commit 10 story points to each of these projects every week. Like, that just doesn't work for our team. Wouldn't make sense for us. It makes sense for, I mean, some teams structured around that, it's not a problem. But when you think about all the different types of practices around Agile, there's really none of them that can't be done remotely. Even pair programming or mob programming can totally be done remote. And there's definitely times that we use live share. So we use VS Code a lot as our coding environment. So we'll use live share and have 2 or 3 people at the same time looking at the code, looking at the stuff we need to do. And the thing I like about that, even better than in-person pair programming, for example, is that everybody has their hands on the keyboard. And I know that kind of violates some of the principles behind pair programming, but the reason I like it is I'm checked out. If I'm not physically touching a keyboard, I am having a really hard time staying engaged. And the longer we're doing it, the harder I find it to focus. If my hands are on the keyboard, even if I'm not doing anything, I find it a lot easier to focus and pay attention. And that's one of the interesting things about remote in general is you'll find that neurodiversity has a different role to play in the way you interact and do specific things. But I don't think there's a problem with doing Agile remotely. In fact, even pre-pandemic, pre-remote work, almost all the Agile teams I worked with were distributed in one way or another, whether they're in different buildings and different cities, spread out all over the place. I mean, I worked in one project with 5 different companies in 8 different cities, and nobody stopped to say, hey, does that really work? Is that really Agile? But as soon as you have 8 people working from 8 different homes, it's like, well, that's not really Agile. Come on, give me a break. It's totally Agile.
Anything where people try to be dogmatic about this, I always get kind of, oh, shut up. Doesn't matter. Are you making progress? And you know, right, to your point, exactly, about the mob programming, 3 people on Stack Overflow is going to be better than 1 person on Stack Overflow anyway. So it's got to be better. How would you summarize your tips for remote work? If you want to give me 3 or 4 points from the last 4 or 5 years, what would they be?
One of the tips is, especially as a manager, to be very careful to communicate your goal, your vision, your values. Be super transparent about your own decision-making process. And the reason is that this helps train the rest of your team on how to make good decisions, which means that they're now empowered to make decisions even when you're not around or available to reach out to. And this is even more important when your team is distributed across time zones, where there's potentially huge gaps of time where you're not actually overlapping your working hours at all. That way they can keep moving forward on something without necessarily having to wait for you. So that's one bit of advice. The other is that I really like the idea of having team agreements around what tools look like and what communication methods look like. So for us, we have picked our current stack of tools in large part because that's what the team wanted to do. And we kind of have some guidelines that we use that we've come up with as a team. One of those for us, for example, is we don't maintain servers ever. So if your tool requires me to spin up a server, even if it's in the cloud, I will not use it. I won't use it because that is putting burden on me that I want to have, especially if I'm giving you money for something, you're going to run it for me. That's just that simple. And the other one is that everything has to integrate with Zapier, for example, because I want to make sure that as we come up with opportunities to automate and automate some of the systems and processes we have in place, I want to be able to do that. So those are some of the, like, those are some of the rules that we have for tools, but keep the team involved in deciding what works or what doesn't. Like, we reviewed a number of different applications before we settled on Slack, for example. There's a lot of alternatives. We had a discussion around what are the pros and cons of the different things, what do we like or not, and then we made a decision and moved forward. And yeah, this is something that I can do because I have a small team, but like, there's a lot of team leads out there that have a certain amount of leverage over what their team gets to use day in and day out, and their teams aren't necessarily any larger than mine, even if they work for a large company. So these are things that I think are still very applicable in other places. Communication processes, like which tool are we using for specific types of communication? Who is responsible for making sure things get documented? When you start a meeting, make sure that you've identified the person that is sitting in that meeting who's taking the notes for the meeting. Make sure that happens. So otherwise, you're going to have this whole meeting and maybe not have any recollection after the fact, no hard evidence of what went down. So that's bad. Things like that, I think, are really important. And make sure that you have clear, predictable touch points, especially with the manager. Make sure that you have a framework for feedback that is in place so that it's really clear. And part of that feedback is, hey, as a remote team, things aren't working, or I feel like I'm not getting heard, or we're dropping the ball on something. Make it really, really easy for your team to do that. One of the things that's been really popular management technique for a number of years is that the open door policy, right? I have come to hate the open door policy. I think it's absolute rubbish because you as the manager are putting 100% of the burden on your people, on your team, to bring stuff to you. You've got to be reaching out and soliciting information, soliciting feedback, checking in to make sure things are going well. And even more when you're running a remote team, it's super duper important that you take the burden of responsibility for maintaining that contact and don't push that off on the rest of the team.
Yeah, a couple of very good points there that kind of resonated with me. The idea of the open door. I've often had bosses, the door is open, but they grunt when you come in, or yeah, I'm on a call, I got an email, or they continue writing the email when you're sitting there. But then the other thing on the notes, I have found that it's good to get people to agree that the notes that were captured are accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Distribute them, ask for modifications.
Yes.
And then, at 5 p.m. the next day, they settle as agreed unless you have challenged. Because, it could simply be, no, I don't, that's not what happened. I didn't, I've seen that happen too.
Totally.
But those are my ones.
We do that, but that's a really good point. That's something that's important not to miss.
Yeah, because it just, it leads to another dispute of a different sort.
Yep.
Those are all really good ones. Any final notes before we wrap up for the evening, Mike?
Wow, I don't think so. Other than if you're doing remote work today, congratulations. If you're not doing remote work today and don't want to be, congratulations. But I'm always happy to talk with folks that are really wanting to get into doing a better job with managing the remote work and managing their teams. I love talking with people about this. So always happy to do that.
How would people get in touch with you or find you if they wanted to?
Sure. The easiest way is probably Twitter. I am Mr. Dowden on Twitter.
I'll put links in. And then you have done presentations on this. I can include links on that. Absolutely. And any other social media or websites you'd suggest to find you?
That's the big one, the AndromedaGalactic.com website, which is where I've been blogging regularly. And too. I've been pretty active on Polywork recently as well. Great. Giving that a try.
Well, Michael Dowden, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much, Brian.
If you liked this episode, check out episode 125 with Angela Dugan on how to build a great team, episode 75 with David Mead about better communications and starting with why, and episode 66 with Ben Day about being a therapist for his teams. The opening music was The Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Starling by Poddington Bear from the album Solo Instruments.